We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about T-Squared Social, the new home of Knicks Film School watch parties. The next one this Saturday when the Knicks take on the Philadelphia 76ers in game one of their first round matchup. Located just two blocks from Grand Central, this place has everything for a sports fan. Join us this Saturday for game one as the Knicks will battle it out with their division rival from the city of brotherly love. Watch the game with us on the biggest screen in New York City, or get there early and grab a table so you and your friends or your family can dine out while watching the game on one of their several other dozen widescreen TVs. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Knicks Film School pregame show. My name is Andrew Claudio, aka GMAC, and it's time to preview a playoff matchup against the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, all year I've been asking everybody about their Mount Rushmore of rivals on this podcast, and not once did New York Philly really come into play. These are two teams that haven't met in the playoffs since 1989. While these cities have gone to war in other sports, these two teams, just there isn't a ton of animosity, which might change in the next week and a half. We're going to break it all down as we have for the most part, getting from the New York perspective and from the X's and O's. I think we've done an outstanding job. Please check out our content if you haven't yet. But it's time to get the Philly perspective, which is what the pregame pod is for. And the first place we got to go to is, of course, from the legendary Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, Mr. Michael Levin. Mike, how you doing, my man?
I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm excited.
That's how the playoffs work, right? We're new to this recurring playoff appearances thing. So this is like what it's supposed to feel like, the anticipation of an opponent going into a seven game series.
I think so. It is. I don't know that the Sixers or their fans are a model for how anyone should feel about <That's> anything.
Fair. Completely fair. So I want to get to some X's and O's stuff with you. And I know we're pressed for time today, but I start every single pregame pod. And I asked Spike this. I asked Olinger this. Like, how are the vibes? And I kind of got a sense of it watching your postgame the other night that it was a hint of relief. But it was also like, all right, now there's an opportunity. So am I reading that right? Is that the vibe in Philadelphia at the moment after surviving the play-in?
I think so. I mean, ugly, ugly game, really embarrassing first half, looking that tentative and confused and like planless against Miami's zone was pretty disheartening. Embiid didn't look 100% right or even really close to it. Maxi seemed pretty tentative himself. But to come back and take over in the second half, and for role players to step up and for the defense to lock in, it felt like they lose that game so often, and they have lost that game so much in the last 6-7 years, that at least finally we fucking won it this time. And so you can go like, all right, fine. So it definitely felt a little like survive in advance-y, but and just avoiding, you know, this is nothing against the Knicks, but everybody wanted to avoid the Boston side of the bracket. So to get on this side and have a shot, and, you know, it's a better outcome, but you know, a big dogfight incoming.
And I know Paul Reed got into some, created some bulletin board material, if you want to call it the easier matchup. Look, I'm always someone looking for it and looking to start the Twitter wars if we can. My heart's just not into it when he's like, yeah, the Knicks are the easier matchup compared to the Celtics. Celtics team with the fifth greatest net rating of all time. However, going into this matchup with the Sixers, and more specifically from your perspective, going into it with the Knicks. So a little behind the scenes. I create all the social clips, like the podcast clips for the show. Anytime something goes out, and over the last couple of days, I've made 4 or 5. And you know how at the top, usually there's like a part of the graphic that's like the topic, and it's like a catchword, like Embiid overrated, like Brunson MVP question mark. Like, I've had the exact same thing at the top of every single graphic promoting our coverage of this series. And it's, how healthy is Joel Embiid? Because it's the only question that matters. We could talk about how they're going to cover Maxey, how they're going to cover Brunson, what lineups both coaches might use. The most important and really the only question I think that matters is how healthy Joel Embiid is, because I think it determines literally everything else that could happen in this series. And I'm sure you agree. So I'm just going to throw that to you. In your estimation, based off of what I saw on Wednesday night, it doesn't seem like he's very healthy. But how healthy do you believe Joel Embiid is?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, he looked really good. He missed 2 months. He comes back, looks probably better than expected for the handful of games he played in the regular season. The Sixers go 8-0 to close it out. They still fall into the play-in because of some pretty rough tiebreaker situations. And then he gets hurt in the Orlando game, plays through it, and misses the final game of the season, which was, you know, it ended up not mattering because they ended up following the plan anyway, but that it felt a little bit like alarm bells of, if this is a win and avoid the play-in situation, which could have happened had you know, Doc Rivers held up his end of the bargain, then it seemed like a game he would have played. But So you get a little tentative about that, and then you watch him in the Miami game, and it just, he wasn't right, man. He's a guy who protected the rim very well in the second half, and I probably didn't give him enough credit for that in the post-game podcast, but he looked slow and he looked indecisive and he looked a little bit, he gets mopey when he's not fully healthy, when he's not like fully in position to dominate the way that we know he can. The benefit is that he's not going to have to defend the perimeter that much against Knicks bigs who are not stretch shooting threats. In a way that if it was against Porzingis or Horford or Brooke Lopez or Miles Turner or something would be more of an issue. Embiid, even against Kevin Love, just like really does not like to come out on shooters. He sort of waves at him. And he can do it when he needs to, but I think he also feels like I'm best served around the rim. And he's not wrong about that, but you wish he had a little bit more. You wish his legs allowed him to do that and get back and protect the rim, which when he's fully healthy, he can do obviously very well. So it's really hard to know. He just didn't look right in that Miami game. And hopefully that's an issue of rust and conditioning. And I would love to see him fully back in the Knicks series. It's going to be really extremely physical, but I don't have a good answer for it. It's hard to know.
So I think that's what it's where we're all kind of going to. It's hard to know at this point what version of Embiid we're going to see. And my projections for the series, and I think all of us at Knicks Film School, all of it's based off of, honestly, what we saw Wednesday. I went back and rewatched the Orlando game and the stretch you're talking about after he played through it. Kind of confused why he came back in the game, but I'm sure you guys also had some thoughts as to
that. That always happens. That's really exactly always happens. He'll get hurt in a game and it'll be like, he should probably sit. He comes back in and then he misses the next game. That's sort of how it goes. It's what happened to Jimmy also in the Miami game.
That is true. So the adrenaline still flowing probably forced him to come back into the game, which is fine. So then there's a 3-part schematic question that I have. The first one, if he's going to play that type of, it's not even like a deep drop. It's a drop coverage where he wasn't even really making an effort because, like you said, he wasn't able to. I'm not even like criticizing the effort he was giving. It's just, it seemed like he was really laboring. And if Tyler Hero is taking those threes and going whatever it was, 9 of 27, you know, you survive it. Jalen Brunson's just murdered drop coverage all season. He averaged 38 points a game against the Bucks and Brooke Lopez. And just about any time that he saw drop coverage, it's either pull up three or just pull up in the mid range if you chase over the screen. Do you foresee an adjustment ahead of time from Nick Nurse as like putting Embiid on Josh Hart or someone else? Or do they just go away from the drop coverage? How do you think they play that?
I think it's a possibility. I think Nurse will probably get pretty aggressive in maybe even more aggressive than I would like in helping off of the Knicks less willing shooters.
I don't have the sounder, by the way, the help. Yes,
I don't love so much help. I think sometimes, but like it depends on personnel, right? So if it's Jalen Brunson, like, yeah, he's going to beat somebody one-on-one a lot and you got to send help. If it's Deuce McBride, stay in front of him. Like, do a better job of keeping your man in front of you, and don't help off of Dante DiVincenzo, who's become obviously a very good prolific shooter from deep, or Bogdanovich. But if you're helping off of like Precious Achiuwa or, you know, Josh Hart is a little bit less less willing to hoist, then that's a different conversation. So hopefully it's a personnel, like, more holistic based. If you're on this guy here, we want you playing off of him so that you can show help to on Brunson's drive so that Embiid can drop and protect the rim so he's not getting beat with, you know, lobs over his head over and over.
So I'll say this. I don't think you're going to see Precious Achiuwa hopefully at all this series.
In the Knicks game in Philly a couple months ago.
He did. And that, remember, didn't have Embiid, didn't have. So it's interesting. The Precious Achiuwa game that you're talking about was when he played the backup five. Mm-hmm. And it was the Tuesday game when Ananobi came back. And that's kind of been our life since, is that Ananobi's back and they don't lose. Yeah. However, we went through 2 months where Precious Achiuwa played the four, and smart coaches like Nick Nurse just said, we're just going to ignore you and make you play the perimeter. And like you said, not help. And it was that Sunday night game, which we were in attendance for as a company, that 79-73 flashback to the 90s. That seemed to be the final straw with Tibbs being like, okay, we tried this for as long as we could. I'm getting Ananobi back. I'm going to go with a more spacing configuration in my starting five. So I don't think you'll see a ton of Precious at the four, maybe as a five, but even and then he's it's pick and roll. It's not necessarily him, you know, spacer, being on the wing, right, trying to be a spacer. Yeah. My thought specifically with the drop is really it's a Brunson related question and how they're going to defend Brunson in this series, because I could see them when the spacing wasn't optimal, like when Precious was playing the four, we saw it on that Sunday night game. Then in the other matchup, he played fine and they were getting out in transition. And I'm curious if you had maybe it's not necessarily an Embiid question, but how do you think they'll best try to defend Brunson this series? Whether it's like with Oubre, with Batum, like probably a lot of Kyle Lowry being a pest.
Yeah.
How do you think they'll try to defend Brunson?
Different looks. I think Embiid will probably drop. They'll live with pull up mid ranges with Batum coming over the screen to try to affect the shot, and then maybe in like, you know, later in the fourth quarter, Embiid will go like, okay, let's switch.
Okay,
but yeah, I think they'll throw different looks at him. I think it'll be a lot of Batum. You saw him had a couple of really nice plays on Tyler Hero. He's long, he's physical, he's got quick feet, and he stays in front of guys pretty well. And can recover for chase down blocks and stuff. I think Lowry's going to want to get in there and get into his body a little bit. They're going to miss, probably, it hasn't been officially announced or anything, but De'Anthony Melton would be great in this matchup. He's a great defender and also a great rebounder as a guard. One of the best, obviously, outside of Josh Hart. That's an issue in the series as far as rebounding, because the Knicks are so good and the Sixers are lazy rebounding team.
We've noted the lineup, by the way, that's starting five with Melton, how insanely like plus 33, which is why Melton is also you're telling a lot of Knicks fans that we've noted how the importance of De'Anthony Melton.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just on both ends, I think just as far as like secondary creation and just like being willing to shoot it quick off the catch. But yeah, I think as far as the Brunson thing goes, I think he's going to get his, if you can set up a situation where they have you force him to make tough contested mid ranges, which obviously he's capable of doing, then I'd rather that than DiVincenzo going like 6 of 14 from three.
Yeah. That, which is in play, obviously. Yeah. Like you said, he's the 14th most threes in NBA history in a single season this year. And look, you, again, you're the more experienced playoff podcaster here. The idea of shooters or role players suddenly going cold in the playoffs has crossed our minds as someone like Devo, someone like Deuce McBride, who has been a revelation since the Ananobi trade where he inserted himself into the rotation. I guess my question is more so like, who of the Knicks role players are you not necessarily most afraid of, but you are you focusing on? Because if they're going to try and take away Brunson, there are going to be other places that they could beat you. And is there a role player that you're like, you know what? I know we're supposed to take away Brunson, but I'm not going to let X also beat me. Like you just mentioned DiVincenzo. Is there anybody else you're like, okay, we can't let this person either beat us in this series?
I think the Sixers have, there's a long history of like high IQ athletic guard wings just hitting enough shots and being a pest on both ends. And I love Josh Hart at Nova, and I love the way he plays, and I wanted them to draft him and they didn't, and it still hurts. A lot of those Nova guys obviously still hurt not being on the Sixers. I think Josh is.
I almost said something real. Sorry, I almost said something really. Yeah, like Mikal Bridges, technically draft one of them.
Yeah. But Josh, as far as like the Sixers are a weak rebounding team, better when Embiid's there, but still not excellent. And I think Josh is coming. You know, even Jimmy picked Embiid's pocket a couple times from the blind side. You saw like Marcus Smart has done that in the past. Drew Holiday's done that in the past.
Brunson did it in the January game. Yeah.
Brunson did it there. So I think you're going to see a lot of Josh Hart just like making heady plays. That's going to make me go crazy. I think his hesitancy from three is enough that that's kind of what you're going to live with and make him fire from deep for a while. But I think also the Knicks' athleticism and physicality advantage, I think, is where they're going to succeed in this series. And if those other guys hit enough shots, then it'll be a long series for us.
18 offensive rebounds the other night for the Miami Heat in that matchup. Now, again, it's one game. It's a one game sample. That's how the Knicks beat the Cavs. Last year was just winning the possession battle. And that's obviously a different team going into this. But it's something I noted that if Josh Hart's able to create an advantage on the boards, that it's one the Knicks could obviously benefit from.
What's up, Knicks fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wish they had more single guys to do it with. No, not that foreplay. We're not looking to get teed up on the pod. I'm talking FOURPLAY foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor. Back when I was single, I would have definitely loved this. Look, we all know everything is better with a friend. Just ask Josh and Jalen, even if Brunson won't admit it. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without any expectation. And the icing on the cake, it's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, FOURPLAY, and get ready for a little 2-on-2 pickup.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Rewatching that game from January, and the tough part, I don't know if you felt this, but the four games that these teams played have just now given us no data to like the first game involved Julius Randle, which like he went 1 of 11 in the game and the Knicks still won by a ton, but like Melton didn't play and now he may not play in this series, but like I can't, like Quentin Grimes was like one of the biggest benefactors of the fourth quarter. And he's obviously not going to play in this game because he's not on this team anymore. So like between that game, then the next game out of the break, obviously Embiid wasn't there. Then the Ananobi came back. But again, Embiid wasn't there. One game was missing Maxey and Embiid. And that's the game the Sixers won. But the one, like the two margins, I'll go to the first one that I'm able to at least. And I'm curious about whether you've thought about this. So Hartenstein seemed to guard Embiid well one-on-one. And that's like a Thibodeau staple that you can bring help, but we're not going to, unless it's Jimmy Butler, we're not doubling hard as part of our philosophy. So if Embiid is compromised, I mean, I'm not going to ask you, do you think Isaiah Hartenstein can stop him? But like, in your opinion, do you think the matchup could potentially be favorable for the Knicks, that Hartenstein, who seemed to be okay with one-on-one coverage against Embiid in that one matchup, or do you just kind of expect like, all right, this should be food? Like, this is the MVP and Embiid should win this matchup.
Obviously, it depends on health. The thing Embiid is so good at, and Hartenstein's long and he's a good defender and he does a decent job. He has done a decent job on defending Embiid without fouling. But if Embiid has a matchup that he doesn't necessarily love, like he will get Hartenstein to pick up two fouls in
two quick fouls. Yeah.
And that's just what he does. He's very good at it. And obviously Mitchell Robinson is the same situation where if Embiid is annoyed, he's just going to like make him reach. But it's so much of that comes down to health. I think if Embiid has improved so much as a passer this year in a Nick Nurse offense, and I think the players around him are more comfortable cutting and moving off of Embiid than they have been in the previous, you know, 6 years. So it's exciting to see that. Like even, you know, the biggest play of the game, I think, aside from all the Nick Batum threes, was Kelly Oubre ducking in, sealing Jimmy Butler, and Embiid making that pass from the opposite wing in a tight window. And Oubre getting it in there for an N1. And it's just nice to see Embiid improve in that area, because in previous playoffs, he has struggled. His assist to turnover ratio is really, really bad. They just announced that D'Anthony Melton's not playing tomorrow, so that is as expected.
Live on the pod.
So it's a matter of like when Embiid is going, and he was having the best season of his career this year, which is crazy to say because he won the MVP. Nobody could stop him 1-on-1. There's nobody could. He rocks into that jumper so easy, and he shoots so well from the mid range, and he can draw fouls, and he can get you to bite at the rim, and if you double him hard, he's going to find shooters. I think the biggest issue, obviously, aside from health, is for both teams, really, is how comfortable are those role players in pulling from deep off the catch quickly? And Tobias Harris is not someone who is comfortable doing that. In previous Knicks games, they've doubled off him pretty heavily in a way that he should feel insulted by.
Yeah.
Nick Batum, you know, part of the Miami game was that they were just, everyone was too hesitant from three. Batum was, Buddy was, obviously Maxey was, which was pretty surprising. But can you get those guys, can you get Buddy open if they're going to double off of him? If Embiid starts beating the matchup 1-on-1 and then they have to show more help, can you punish them for sending that help with some threes off the catch or baseline cuts or something? So that's what's going to boil down to, really, is like, can those role players hit shots and even just take those shots is for so much of the Sixers, seeing guys hesitate off of Embiid post-ups is so frustrating. And Embiid for years has gotten on them being like, fucking shoot, shoot it when I pass it to you, you son of a bitch. So hopefully that happens.
So again, we're going back to the question from the beginning. How healthy is Joel Embiid? I don't want to make the entire pod like that, but it is, of course, the biggest X factor. I think the second one outside of, at least from a Philly perspective, is how the Knicks guard Maxey. A start would just don't let him get out in transition from my perspective. And well, let me ask you, who do you not want to see on Maxey that could potentially slow him down? I want to see what your answer to this question is.
I don't think it matters. I think
okay.
If they're not playing, hopefully, you know, the thing about Maxey is that he's just such a quick learner and he puts things in his rear view so quickly. He's just such a good player and such a good, like, has such a great headspace to the game and like around his teammates and how much that he's had to take a bigger role this year with Embiid missing for so long, and seeing how teams blitzed him to get the ball out of his hands a lot of, and when he's like number one on the scouting report, has turned him into a way better player. And those minutes without Joel, they can survive more because Maxey is so capable of, you know, beating two guys running at him at once, basically splitting the defenders and getting the shot up so quick. I think if it's Anunoby covering him, obviously Anunoby's an excellent defender, but then that means Anunoby's not helping off somebody else and using his off-ball skills to deny the ball or help at the rim or something. And if it's DiVincenzo or Josh Hart or Brunson, they're gonna get beat.
If it's Brunson, that's not a favorable matchup. The name that's been thrown out a ton, and look, again, if you're looking for small margins to pay attention to, the game coming out of the All-Star break where the Knicks went up big, Sixers made a comeback, and then Tibbs went to that smaller lineup with Deuce McBride at the two. Didn't completely shut Maxey down, did slow him down to an extent. And I guess that's the matchup that some Knicks fans have pointed to as like, this is an adjustment Tibbs can make, is you put Deuce on Maxey, and then you can, again, have OG guarding Tobias Harris and treat him like Precious Achiuwa, and just, you know, have him as like you said, a free safety, and potentially make that work. I'm curious the chess match and how it goes. I don't think there's much to do, especially the way Maxey's played over the last month, but it is an adjustment I'm curious if they go to. I want to turn the floor over to you, like any Knicks questions you potentially have for this series.
Just the last thing on the Maxey thing. I think,
oh yeah, go ahead.
Because Tibbs is obviously psychotic, but he's not psychotic in the way that Spoelstra is. Like, he's going to play him pretty straight, I think. And I think you're going to see a lot of dribble handoff between Embiid and Maxey. And if Embiid gets Deuce or Anunoby or whoever on those screens, and it's Maxey and Isaiah Hartenstein in a foot race to the rim, Hartenstein's going to lose.
Right.
Maxey gets that up so quick. He's got, watch for Maxey forcing goaltends, because There was a stat, I lost exactly the numbers now, but earlier in the season there was a stat of him causing the most goaltends in the league by a sizable margin. And I think he forced two in the Miami game. He just gets the ball up so much faster than bigs, like even like Bam Adebayo could expect. And so I think you're gonna see, even though Hartenstein's long and has good instincts, and same with Mitch, I think you're gonna see him. He's just too fast. He's too fast, too quick, and he's got touch on that shot.
I would just wonder if the Knicks, they play a lot of drop, and I wonder if they would just play it and drop. I just, even if, so like you said, in the scenario where...
But Maxey can be dropped. Like, that's the thing. He's so fast. Yeah. He can even blow by if you're dropping, and you're like, you're not dropping enough. He's kid's unbelievable, man.
So Anunoby comes with the help. I guess this is where I ask a question about the role players that... Yeah. Look, I have no idea how many minutes Tobias Harris is going to play in this series. In my opinion, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I know... Sure. From a Sixers standpoint, he hasn't played. The fewer, the better. So who's starting? Like, who's? Do you think they go to Mac to Lowry at the second guard spot? Do they go to Batum after the way he played in the play-in? Like, who's the fifth guy? And I guess more importantly, who's closing? And is it matchup dependent, or who's playing well?
I think it was nice to see Tobias not close in that lineup. Nurse said that it was because he was tired, but that is a lie.
And protecting his vet. Well. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think it'll be, I tend to prefer Oubre coming off the bench. I just like that sort of, when it's Maxi Embiid, I like everybody else sort of spacing around it, and Oubre getting to run a little bit of like offense geared towards him when he comes in with a little bit of pop and athleticism, because he can get to the rim so well. But I think that they will probably start the series with the same lineup that they started against the Knicks, which is Maxi, Lowry, Oubre, Tobias, Embiid, and Batum off the bench, and then him closing some of those lineups. But and then the other two guys in the rotation being Buddy Hield and Paul Reed, probably, and maybe Campaign if they need a little pop of shooting and ball handling. But yeah, I think it'll be dependent on who does well on Brunson. I do think they're going to throw different looks at him. But it's without Melton, it's going to be, I think, everybody getting a shot.
Everybody. Yeah. So any other Knicks questions or thoughts or observations going into the series that you have?
Does it, like, the Sixers have been missing for years, like athletic wings, and Kelly Oubre being here, and even Batum, even though he's older, is still, he plays athletic because he's long and quick and smart. It feels, even though the Sixers are at such a disadvantage in this series, it feels like we're in like a renaissance of Sixers wing athletes. How does it feel to have like a very athletic team like that gets to everything, that can just assert their will? Like, is that something that you feel like, that's, does that feel like an advantage to you as much as it feels like something I'm worried about?
It does. And I think it's going to be how they're going to have to create offense. I don't think they're going to stop Brunson. I do think they're going to make life difficult for him. The thing he's struggled with when he has struggled this season is length.
Yeah.
And that's something Kelly Oubre, and Batum, like, have done a good job on with him this season. What they've done, and I can't believe I'm going to say this about Tom Thibodeau, but their offense has looked so creative over the last month. If you blitz Brunson, he gets it on the short roll to Hartenstein, and it's just 4-on-3. If it's not Hartenstein, it's Josh Hart, and then it's once again a 4-on-3 with Ananobi cutting or DiVincenzo wide open. They get out in transition on every miss, and that's the benefit of Josh Hart being your lead rebounder at the moment. And that's, again, the Embiid health question. If he's lumbering to get back, then like we're playing 5-on-4 after every miss. Yeah. So yeah, it's a beauty to see, especially, look, I have an affection for Julius Randle. I defend him more often than I'm realistic about some of his deficiencies, but I find myself defending him a ton, especially with how well the Knicks are playing. However, it's like, It's just a different world at the moment, where they're playing with a different kind of pace, especially these last, really since Ananobi came back, the Sixer game, that Tuesday night game. And then obviously when he came back over these last seven. It's great. It's added a new element to this team that doesn't really keep you out of games too, because they play with a more athletic pace.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing I'm concerned about is rebounding on both ends, because the Knicks are good at it and the Sixers are vulnerable. And the fact that the Knicks can rebound on both ends and also get out in transition and also get back in transition is, scary to me. That's all wrapped up in the athleticism and the speed and the quickness. And it'll be interesting to see how short Tibbs' rotation gets. And
it's all bogey dependent. It's all bogey dependent. Right. Yeah.
And bogey's killed the Sixers in the past too. I mean, he's a guy that just seems to hit a ton of shots against us. It's the Sixers just don't have that many guys without Melton to really just like go get the fucking ball. And Batum and Lowry are kind of the best at that, even though they're the oldest guys in the team. So we're going to see there's going to be a bunch of momentum swinging rebounds and then transition opportunities for the Knicks that are backbreaking for the Sixers. That is my impression of the series.
So one of the things I am curious about to see what Nurse does is the Knicks have just like lost the non-Brunson minutes since since the Julius Randle injury.
Are there going to be any non-Brunson minutes, I guess?
So that's where he's been on a minutes restriction. I don't know if you remember there was a Sunday night game against the Cavs where Brunson pulled up lame. He got it was a pinched nerve in his leg. And look, in the moment, we were like, oh, the season's over. Like, there was no evaluation of how does the rest of the game go? But since then, he missed two games and then came back and has been on a minutes restriction. And the minutes restriction only got somewhat lifted over the last three games. You know, obviously he played in overtime against the Bulls, but it's been a very strict. And this is, I think, where the training staff and Tibbs have had to be a push and pull. Hartenstein's been on a minutes limit. Anunoby's been on a minutes limit. Brunson's been on a minutes limit. And it's more so a consecutive minutes limit that you're not going to play full quarters. You're going to play at most 7 to 10 minutes in a row. And these three guys, because there are three best players, we're going to monitor as closely as possible. Everybody else, Precious Achiuwa, Josh Hart, Deuce McBride, Devo, just don't even know. Don't even look at the seats because you're not sitting for the rest of the game. And, you know, the team's obviously bought into that. I think the non-Brunson minutes are 4 minutes a half. And especially if it's not working, he's not sitting in the second half. But yeah, the non-Brunson minutes have been an issue. I'm just curious, like you said, how many there will actually be.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we've been talking about, and Mike O'Connor at the Rights Ricky Sanchez has written about is how many the Knicks have had a better offense than expected, especially without that many options. But how it's really just Brunson. He is the engine of the entire thing. And if you can limit them in transition, and Brunson is a small guard which is an archetype that hasn't succeeded that much in the playoffs. And the Sixers have bigger guys that they can throw at him. How much can you put him in the mud? So that's I think the hope is that our Maxi Embiid is a better way to get offense than just Brunson against a tough longer defender. So we'll see about that. I'm also interested in, you know, Nick Nurse coaching against OG Anunoby, who he obviously played with in Toronto for so long. And I think it's always interesting to me when Anunoby has improved as a shooter. He's not shooting as much as he was in Toronto, and he's improved as an offensive player. And I've always loved him, but what's an old coach do to his former player? That's an interesting, G level storyline, lower on the totem pole. But that's a matchup I'm looking at to see how he coaches against him. So that'll be interesting. But I mean, look, man, I would have rather faced the Bucks or the Pacers. I'm glad it's not Boston. At least we can wait on that. But you know, one of these fan bases is gonna be real upset because these are both two good teams, and it's a tough matchup.
Yeah, you said it in the post game pod the other night, which I respect that you both said that they should win the series, because obviously from a Knicks perspective, we're seeing how limited Embiid is, and we're the Knicks should have a good chance to win the series. Yeah. And Vegas reflects that. They're even odds at the moment. But I thought they're a motherfucker to play is the perfect way to describe the Knicks, because they just they don't get blown out. They're never really out of a game. They I've seen them play shorthanded with six guys and Josh Hart's having to take 18 shots and they're still tied in the fourth quarter, you know? So that's why they've won our hearts here in New York. We do respect what Joel Embiid is, especially at peak, which is why I think this is going to be a long series. And, you know, like you said, one of us is going to be disappointed, and I like you, Mike, and I'm not going to tell you who I hope is disappointed at the end of the series.
Yeah, I just hope it's an injury-free series. That would be it's every, you know, the Sixers aren't the only fan base that holds their breath for one player staying healthy and not falling weird and all that stuff. But just feels like it's been so many years of Joel being as good as he is, and he keeps getting better, and he's. You know, fighting through this thing. And I want it for him, man. I really want it for him. So hopefully he stays healthy and everything. They at least give a good, healthy series, and one of us is happy.
We'll see. Mike Levin, as always, thank you so much for joining me here on the Knicks Film School pregame show. Before you get out of here, any postgame coverage that you guys have planned, please let the fine folks at home know where they can find it.
Oh, man, we do it. I don't know how this started happening. We used to do just one podcast a week, and then it became two podcasts a week, and now it's a podcast after every single playoff game. And so that is what you really get to see, a window into who I am immediately after a game. I'll never do like a live watch thing because I think I would get arrested. Okay. I'm not fit to be televised during that, but immediately after, when I've calmed down a small amount, we do podcasts right after the game, which I'm excited for it to be a Knicks Sixers series. The fact that it's never happened since 89 is pretty wild. And it does feel like a rivalry that has been on ice for a little bit that should come back, because this is a good team. They're gonna be good for a while.
Yeah. I very much hope that there's no bricking for chicken in game three or game four that plays a factor into, because I can live with a role player getting hot. I can live with Embiid being, you know, the second coming of Wilt. I can't live with the chicken promotion potentially ending my season.
I understand,
you know,
that.
As much but as I'm glad that it might have ended the Miami Heat season, I can't let it happen to me, you know?
But it's two fan bases and two arenas that could really just suffocate you, I think, and turn the tide and feel like a college arena in that sense, when you feel like you're in enemy territory and stuff. And so it's going to be loud. I think there's going to be, obviously there's plenty of Knicks fans in Philly and plenty of Philly fans in New York. So it'll be contentious, but I'm excited. I want a good series. I want a good, healthy series. That's really what I want. And I'm not making a prediction, because if I do, they'll fucking fuck me on it. So no,
I got it. So I can't get you to say,
you
like,
can give, you can give a prediction. My prediction is like, fuck these guys. I hate, I,
this fuck, is the, when, fuck the Knicks.
You guys are in the, no, not the Knicks. Fuck the Sixers.
Oh,
when you guys, Sixers, okay. Like, you're still in the, like the glory days. It's like, feels still fun. And Brunson is this good and unbelievable. And we're there with Maxi, and we love, and like, obviously, but we've just have so much more baggage of so many more failures. And it's a little bit more like, you better fucking do this. It's not like, I love my guys. It's more like, you fucking, if you don't fucking do that, you mess me on this. Like, it's really, there's just too much. There's too many baggage for this guy. So hopefully they survive it, and we can exhale a little bit and move on for the first time in a while.
I'm more just worried. I hope you survive it, win or lose, Mike LeVay.
This is it, man. This is what you get. Can't move on. My life, my well-being is tied to these guys for better or more likely for worse.
Well, I hope you have a pleasant viewing experience, although I guess in this case, I hope you have a miserable viewing experience, but you're welcome back anytime. Thank you to Mike Levin of the Right to Ricky Sanchez podcast. And thank you, everybody, for joining me, as always, for another edition. By the way, join us at T-Squared Social. I'll be in Midtown, right around the corner from Grand Central, watching this game with everybody. I'll say this, might not be wanting somebody to watch the game live with, but I can kind of handle it. I'll be motherfucking Embiid at the screen if he's flopping or potentially drawing two guys, getting the Knicks in foul trouble in the first half. So join us at T-Squared Social in Midtown. It's free admission, under 21, and welcome as well. Until next time, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Enjoy the game, and I'll speak with you soon. Peace.